Okay, so let's get started. So what are we going to do today is to talk about, so the plan is that now we can talk about today and our universe. Well, we care about other universes, as you can see from yesterday's tutorial, which solution is posted. You can see the fate of all kinds of universe. And then we'll talk about the supernovae. Okay. I should say it's the type 1A, some special supernovae. But there are still tons of them, so we're okay. And this is the experiment that confirmed that the dark energy exists. It measures its value and also says that not only that, but actually it's approximately a cosmology constant. At least that the deviation from the cosmology constant is very small and the center value is basically that. Okay, so that's the plan. So let's say what we have seen so far. Okay. We have write down this equation basically every day after we discover it. What we have done so far is that we can define something called a critical density of today. By the way, there's some fun fact about the critical density about our universe. You can calculate it to some number, but it's about f of order 10, or a few, let's say, hydrogen per cubic meter. So if you think about it, the cubic meter, the whole universe on average has about 10 hydrogen in a cubic meter. So it's really not that dense. And the other way is also very enlightening to talk about. It's about a 10 to the 11th solar mass per megaparsec cubic. So the top is about on average how many stars per galaxy have. On the bottom is on average how close two galaxies are. So it's crazy that the critical density of the universe is all seems about the size of the galaxy has about the size of the galaxy of a material. So this is a hint that, you know, our universe probably have about the same as the critical density. So just by literally doing like order of magnitude and looking. So this is kind of cute. What do we get out of all this is that now we can define some omega, as someone pointed out yesterday to me that nobody make a zero to omega. So let me drop that. Just whenever it's omega, it's measured today. It's just a density parameter that is dimensionless. We like a dimensionless stuff. And then we're going to use the insight that the rho is proportional to something like a to the minus 3 times 1 plus w, which is what we get out of the equation of the state, is that once we know this, then we know rho decay in some certain way, as written down follows, says the radiation decay with a factor of minus 4, and the matter with a factor of minus 3. And then there is, of course, cosmology constant that doesn't change. And then people often write the curvature term also in the same way, just that it fits into this equation. So that's what we have yesterday. And today, the first thing we're going to do is a simple exercise, which I'm sure that when you were taking various kinds of limits yesterday, you already done this simple exercise. which is if you take some limit, there's only matter. Or there's no matter, there's all cosmology constant. So basically what simple exercise we did yesterday is to take the limit of the single component universe. And I receive some frowning because you know, then you know 2 points and I ask you to sketch a curve between them. But we'll justify that it's important to study about a single component universe just in a minute when we talk about our universe. At this point, we're just doing a simple exercise. And this simple exercise is, say, only one term survive. So I'm just write one more line says, I can use this thing to unify all of them. It just, now there is only one thing, it's sum over all kinds of components. So at this point, it's very easy to take a single component says omega I equals to whatever equals one, everything else is zero, and I can do stuff. So let's do that. Which there is omega I here, which is taken to be one. That's the definition of a single component, is there is nothing else. Okay, if you remember, okay, so let's write it like this, square equals h0 square. Okay, I'll just take the square root like that. I'm sure you have went through this exercise yesterday, you're just taking square root, moving h0 square over, take square root, and take that square root, just divide the exponent by 2. And then we can make an ansatz, says a is something proportional to a polynomial. Actually, only one term. It's a power law thing. And this answer says, well, A dot over A, if it's a power law, it gives me 1 over T. Always, there's a Q there. Who cares? Let me write it as T to the minus 1 times Q. And on the other hand, I have T to the minus 3 over half Q 1 plus omega I. Well, of course, the proportional coefficient should equal as well. But what's most important, I should make the power equal. So I have this thing. And this tells me, so I'm doing a little bit faster because you have done this yesterday for various cases. So what we get is it's always, almost always a power law with exponent of this thing. And you can easily check, says W equals 0, this thing equals 2/3, which is what you studied for the matter-dominated universe. What we haven't done is for radiation, it's 1/3. Then you can check this thing is 1/2. You can also check for curvature, which is minus 1/3. And you can say this is 1. We run into a little trouble for cosmology constant because we get a Q equals infinity. What the hell? Okay, when W equals minus 1, this thing just disappeared. It's A dot over A equals a constant, which you guys have solved. In this case, we have exponential. So this thing says T to 2/3, 2/3. And then this one is linear. And let's label them. This is matter. This is radiation. And this is the curvature. And this is lambda. And literally, matter radiation defined by this equation of motion. So we will talk about what kind of them can be matter or radiation, but that is the definition. It's defined by their equation of state. So that's a simple exercise. Says we have a universe, but if we want to exactly solve for something, this thing doesn't look like exactly solvable, and it's not. But if you say only single component survives, then it's easily solvable. It's either a power law in normal cases, but if you have a cosmology constant, you get exponential. Okay, so as I said, I want to justify that this exercise is useful by looking at our universe. So as we will justify, well, we will talk about the observation a little bit to enlighten that what kind of observation will lead to the result later, but our universe has the following profile. It has omega r. Okay, you can. There is a link on Wiki about particle data group. Apparently, they also talk about the cosmological data that it's updated to 2017 about the precise number. Like they are getting more and more precise, and I don't feel particular interest to remember them up to 3 digits and write on the board. So I'll still write the approximate value. Something like this. And this is it's the easy one to think about it because we have CMB. The temperature is measured really deadly well. It's something like 2.735 Kelvin. And it's Planck. It's a Planck distribution. It's the most perfect Planck distribution you have ever thought about. So you have a bus of a photon. And you know the distribution, you know the temperature, so you can calculate the energy of all this photon. And then you have to also take in account of if there are light neutrinos. But that's it. So that's the radiation density parameter. It's basically coming from CMB. And actually, in your second homework, which we'll hand out next Monday, you will study extensively about neutrinos. Isn't that cool? So neutrino actually have also this CMB, but it's not, it's called the C newbie because like this, indicating it's the neutrino. What you're going to calculate is that this temperature is actually going to be lower than CMB. Unfortunately, you know, neutrinos, they are ridiculously hard to catch. So nobody can measure that temperature. But people are trying really hard, and they're trying to prove that, yes, there is also this neutrino background also coming from the same, about the same time. Well, sometime before that, because the neutrino will decouple earlier because they're weak interaction. We're going to talk about when things decouple and the source of that starting next week. Okay, so this is the easy one. Then we move on to this guy. This guy is about this big. Let's just use 0.3. So the matter density is basically, as you might have heard about, actually the things we actually know about. Bionic is like ordinary matter made of us is only about 0.05. And this coming from BBN, which we're going to talk about next week, middle, like Wednesday, Tuesday. And the rest is something called the dark matter. And we're going to spend about a lecture and a half talking about dark matter and mostly about why do we think they exist. So in the summary is that they existed by looking at how things move in clusters, how galaxies move in galaxy clusters. And if they don't have enough mass, so they're moving in the same way and they doesn't match to the way predicted by the mass we can observe. They have to have something else. And there is the other one is famous, is the rotational curve within one galaxy. Is that if it's Newtonian physics, you would imagine that you will rotate slower once you get out of the galaxy disk. It's like in the solar system, if you have planet further away from sun, they will rotate slower. This is not observed in galaxy. Like you have a galaxy disk, you have something that, so there is, if you look at our galaxy, for example, if it's a disk galaxy, you have a really shining ball in the middle, and then you have a big disk. And you would think that most of the mass is in this ball, so when you get it onto the arms, the spiral arms, then usually the velocity should drop. That's not observed. You observe the speed almost don't change when you go out to the galaxy. So that we can do a very simple Newtonian calculation, and the observation is just the velocity is a straight line. And so that doesn't agree. So from those experiments, you can just weigh in your galaxy and looking at how they move, and then they will give you an estimate of the dark matter. And then we come to omega lambda. Well, we know that these things all sum to be one. So there are only one independent thing you can measure. So what I think I'll say that this thing is basically zero. So smaller, there's a bound on how flat our universe is. It's basically the flat universe is still consistent with observation. This actually comes from CMB, which you do some statistics about the CMB, which you see that very famous CMB plot. And it's interesting where this peak is directly related and only related to which kind of universe we're in. So this thing actually depends on omega k and not much on other things. Because this is basically zero, so this where the peak is constrained the sum of omega m and omega lambda. And what the CMB, all the Planck analysis tells us that this thing is very close to zero. So now, we can calculate this is about 0.7, which is what is left. We have one in total. So what we're going to do now is to draw, okay, this is our universe today. We're going to try to draw this and go backwards in time. So as you see, they are all growing pretty fast when we're going backwards. And the universe age is also a very long time. So we're going to do it on a log-log plot. And we're not going to do it very carefully. So otherwise, I wouldn't have a board big enough to show the things that are interesting. So this will be a log-log plot of the energy density, rho. Because if you multiply this, it's off by a constant, so log plug. It doesn't matter. It's just multiplied by the critical density. So this is a rho t plot. And they are growing exponentially because it's a log plot, which is nice. Because we're drawing something, we're trying to draw the density, how density behave as a function of time. And if it's a log-log plot, they are just straight lines. It's much more doable to draw straight lines on board than even like a sphere. Okay, so let's say suppose we're here today. I'll just arbitrarily choose this is to be today. And what we know is dark energy is about there. In the log-log plot, 0.3 and 0.7 are really close. But the advantage is at least you can draw radiation on the log-log plot. Otherwise, radiation would be somewhere down there. But you can draw radiation that way. Otherwise, everything is squished here and then just explode. Okay, so let's say radiation starts from here because it's, after you take a log, it's minus sign. Interesting. I picked the three different colors and they still all look the same to me. Okay, let's see. We're just gonna draw matter in white and we'll draw radiation in blue. So this is lambda, this is omega matter, and yeah, there is also this curvature thing. We'll just put it here. We're not going to draw a line for it, as I will state why. But now we have a bunch of three straight lines to draw. I'll draw the first one first. I know how even straight lines are very hard to draw. I think I've done this right, hopefully. Okay, so then we have omega matter. It's something like slope is like minus 3 or something. So because it actually grows when we go backwards, so quickly, it takes, at some point, it's more important than dark energy. If today omega lambda is only the same order with omega matter, this grows as 1 over 8 cubed. This doesn't change. So this will for sure happen. Even when I don't draw any plot, I know that at some point, you know, matter is going to take over. For the same reason, we know that this radiation starts out really, really not that much. But it's like orders of magnitude, like 10 to the 3 something, 10 to the 3, 10 to the 4 smaller than other things. But we still list it here. It's funny that we always say, oh, this is just zero, but we always have to keep that here. And we'll say why. As long as this is non-zero, you can just go backwards in time. And eventually, because of the slope, it's going to take over. Okay, this is not a straight line. On the other hand, okay, let me redraw this. Where is the blue? Still not a straight line. Okay, this demonstrated my point, because funnily that our next topic is about something related about distance, that how to measure curved distance in the universe. So this is very on topic. I let it go somewhere. Okay, I give up. No wonder you guys are very against that to fix 2 points, draw a line between them. It's very hard. Okay, this one is a straight line. It crosses like it's completely not to scale, and this is the best straight line I can draw. Sort of straight. So now the point I'm trying to make is that if omega matter and omega radiation and dark energy, so we draw the all of three, which I really don't understand why the blue looks exactly like white. But the point is, if we are the universe, we only care because this is a log-log plot. So as long as this thing's on top, it's going to dominate. Like each of the slot is like a factor of 10, something like that. So basically, if you are a universe and decide how to evolve, you only really care about this part because it's dominating, but then the switch at some point onto this guy, and then in the end, the dark energy dominate. So along this thing that I tried to highlight is how universe will evolve to the zeros order. Nope. La, 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 la. All right. Mental note, never try to draw straight lines on board anymore. So now let's consider about omega k, which is curvature. The thing about this curvature, writing this way is nice, because you know that it grows as a to the minus 2, which means it grows slower than omega matter. So if today we have percentage curvature, in the past, it's going to be less and less important. Yeah, because it grows, doesn't grow as fast as matter. And in the future, since it does drop as 1 over a square, and dark energy doesn't drop. So there's no chance anywhere in the history of universe, the dominant term would be this guy. So even if this is much larger, that could be much larger than radiation, but if we only consider ring about the dominant term to solve a freedom equation, actually we can always ignore that term when we do approximate solutions. So that's why that if you look at this energy density, of course it's, you know, question mark that you can do single component universe right at the transition point. So this is when radiation and matter is radiation matter when it's equal. It's about at 60,000 years, I think. So around that point, okay, single component universe might be iffy. But then, and then right around this transit point, actually around 9 billion years, it's basically today in the scale of the universe. That's when when the matter and the dark energy is equal. But right around these two teeny points, it's basically a single component universe with the component that keep changing as the time goes. So at first is a radiation dominated universe, and then it's a matter dominated universe, then now it's a dark energy dominated. So this. So we can safely say that the universe expands as t to the 1/2, and then it expands as t to the 2/3. So when matter dominates, it expands a little faster. And today onward, in the future, it expands exponentially. And as you will study, or you already studied in the first homework, we now live in a de Sitter universe with k equals 0. There is subtlety you will explore in the homework, that de Sitter universe depends on where you define the k. But so Anyway, so this is our universe today. And just to be happy about all this, we'll make a chart. Chart, good. They keep things checked. So we'll ask, what's the component? The dominant component. And then we'll ask the question, what is made of? And then we'll ask, what's the equation of state, basically, W? Then what happens, what x rho? And how A behaves. So, at the start, it's the radiation. This thing is basically made of photons. And maybe, well, definitely neutrinos in the early days, in the early history of the universe, neutrinos are definitely radiation. But now they seem to have mass. We don't know what the mass are. But today's universe, the temperature is really low. So low that we think maybe the heavier neutrinos would be actually considered not to be radiation today anymore. But the early universe, definitely neutrinos. And this one has W equals 1/3, right? And this falls off as 1/8. And this one has T to the 1/2. And this some extra note. So that's radiation. And then we have matter. So what's matter make of? Well, it doesn't really take a brilliant observer to realize our universe has a lot of things. For example, that milk, balloons, fluffy animals, and cookies are considered to be the most important things the universe have by Robert. Well, but the universe doesn't care. In a cosmologist's point of view, there are not many differences between cabbages and the kings, according to Barbara, my favorite author recently. She says that according to the cosmologist, the only difference between cabbage and the king is probably the king is more massive. And the mass is important. But anyway, so all the things we know are called bionic matter. And you're like, but there are electrons. What did it? Don't take terminologies that are serious. Anything that standard model talk about that is not massless is bionic. And if you think that we're being too sloppy, you should really ask what astronomers mean when they say metal. Basically, anything heavier than helium are metal. Which, well, in our point of view, next week, basically at some point, we just say everything heavier than helium does not exist, and then we calculate what happens. So there is certainly bionic matter, which, as I said, it's anything that we are made of. And as I mentioned, that there is something called the dark matter, that's going to be the topic next week for maybe lecture 8 and 9. Talk about. So we'll spend some more time on dark matter. There's lots of evidence that they exist, except we have no clue what they are. And according to Neil Wyler, one of my favorite dark matter theorists, he says that at this point, looking for dark matter is like somebody who has drunk a little bit and who is looking for the keychain. So a friend is just seeing him looking for things under a lamppost at night. And I says, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for my keys. And the friend helped him to look. And then says, I don't see any keys. Do you actually remember you dropped your keys here? And he says, no, I dropped it over there. And he was like, why are you looking here? And he says, well, this is where there's light, I can look. So that's the situation particle physicists are facing about dark matter, is they look where they can. And we'll talk about more that where, you know, they think somewhere are more plausible than others. I think that will be our tutorial to call the dark matter miracle, to show why people think if dark matter is some really heavy particles of order 100 GeV and not interacting much, like weakly interacting, then it is a very plausible solution to dark matter. And of course, they have to propose a specific model that have these candidates, and that's lots of stories. So the next thing is, well, let's see. Let's first talk about a curvature. It's simple. This thing we know what it is. It's the K in our. So let's fill up the table for any matter, dark matter or not, that omega equals zero. This thing falls off as 1/8 cubed, and then this thing proportional to t to the 2/3. And for curvature, let's just quickly fill it out, because it's a thing in the metric. It has some properties, and we're not spending more time on it. Also, we always just say, we believe it's zero, at least it's zero enough that we can ignore it. Like, literally, because it's much, much smaller than a dominant component in any era. And now we get to talk about dark energy. Probably a cosmology constant. And what mechanism is behind the cosmology constant? We have no idea. But the equation of stasis, we actually know it's -1. And so rho doesn't change. And the A goes exponentially. We'll make some notes, which is happening right now. So let's explain a little bit why we are so convinced that the dark energy exists, which is called the supernova experiment. That's important. So how is supernovae has to anything to do with dark energy? Isn't that weird? So first, let's talk about, before we get down to do some calculation, don't worry, it's not too long, but before we get down to do some calculation, let's talk about what is very hard to do in a cosmological scale is to measure the distance. We don't have a cosmological ruler that you can just read off the distance. We have to figure out some other way. And apparently today I'm very in favor of lamps. So let's talk about the lamps. So imagine you're walking in a dark street. And the street is straight. And you have a bunch of lamps in front of you. And it's clear that the lamps further down the street will look dimmer to you. It's a simple observation we can make every night. If you can find a long street with lamps and no other lights to distract you. And actually, it makes sense. It simply says that it's the inverse square law. Each lamp, if they are made industrially to be identical, they will have the same power And because you are further away from them, you only receive smaller and smaller fraction of the 4 pi r squared. Hence, they look dimmer. But you can turn this thing around. You say, suppose I can find the lamps, which is on the straight. Then, instead of using my naked eye, I use some device to measure how much light I receive from the lamp. Then, because of the inverse square law, that I can predict where the lamp is. You can use the dimness of the or brightness of the lamp to measure the distance of the lamp. It's kind of silly in real life because you can just walk over there and count how many steps you are. And if you're that famous king, and your number of steps is exactly the distance in feet. Okay, but this is exactly how astronomers and cosmologists measure distance. Is they need to find the lamp, and they need to find the inverse square law. But today, we're actually going to use, we have inverse square law, knowing how dim the lamp is to predict the distance, and all knowing the distance to predict how the dim. And now we're going the third way around. We're trying what the observations have done is to measure how dim the lamp is, how far the dim is, try to predict the inverse square law because we no longer have it. Inverse square law is really assuming we're in the Euclidean geometry with no expansion. We're in a very particular space to have such a nice law between the magnet, the power of the lamp, perceive the power of the lamp and the distance. In our universe, we don't have it. So that's how this observation can be able to, we'll see how dark energy comes into this whole picture together when we do the calculation, but that's the calculation we want to do. We want to calculate the power we observe, and we want to calculate the distance. In some sense, in distance is a sort of like a redshift, because we always want to relate it to something observable. How bright a supernova is observable. What's the redshift of this supernova is observable. So if you can observe them, you can plot a bunch of scattered dots for each supernova. And if you have a model to predict what the other law should be, and if your law even depends on some parameters, only certain parameters will go through those data, we win. Okay? So all this analogy, I'm trying to point it out that what we want to calculate is something called observed flux, which is just power over area. And we want to relate this with redshift, which in some sense is the distance, at least in the nearby galaxy. You know that it's V over C, and you have a Hubble's law, so it's related to distance. So now, of course, we're going to do the calculation to calculate the observed flux. And we'll just call it a flux. Well, by definition, it's power over area. So it's some energy we receive in some certain of time, and then divided by area. Okay, how do we proceed from here? Okay, we'll take a detour of geometry. We're just going to pick a slightly better metric. It's the same metric, but we'll do some transformation of it such that its calculation is easier. So our original metric says this. There's things we don't like about this metric. For example, this term is too complicated. So the first thing we do is we're going to call this some other other distance. Of course, you can't do this for free. You get something r, which is very customly denoted by this thing, which you can solve it for different k. It's not hard at all. It's the square root of that thing from like a first year calculus when I have to remember a lot of integrals. Square root of 1 over 1 plus minus x squared is one of them I have to remember. And it turned out to be not so hard a function. And you don't have to remember like what they are. The only thing you want to remember what we did is we make the radial dependence easier. And simultaneously, we will do this thing. We make dt squared equals 8 squared t. D tau squared, and this tau is called a conformal time. And the name is given because after we do that, is our metric look like this. It looks, well, if k equals 0, it looks basically like a Minkowski stretched by something. So you can take all the a squared t dependence out of the whole thing, even for the time component. And this part looks really nice. And this is why we do this, because we're going to talk about the light travel. And this is how light travels. We're just changing to a coordinate such that the light travels in the 45 degree. So that will make some things slightly easier. And not to make anything harder, so it's a good thing to do. So those particular part is not important. The important part is, remember, we want to arrive at a conformally sort of space. Okay, so after we do that, let me resume my flux calculation, which is observed energy over time over area. Okay, so we know what this is. The observed energy is like emitted energy, except now it's redshifted, right? It's a bunch of photons that the supernovae emit. But when they get to me, it's already a few billion years later. So then they get redshifted by the expansion of the universe. This is the result we get, the geodesic equation says this. I'm just apply to the chunk of photons I get. And then the emitted, what's nice about this thing is this emitted energy we know, because we're talking about a supernova. The supernova, the power is the same. That's why we pick supernova. Well, type 1a supernovae. They classified as some certain star explodes, and this type of star, when they explode, they emit the same power because, you know, the boundary condition trigger the explosion is the same for all the stars. Okay, so this L is a constant, and we know what it is. Just check, type 1a supernova, what's your power? That's a constant. And then it will be dirt emitted. So that's power times time again, but applied to that distant supernovae. And the last step is what we did here, says dirt t is equals a d tau. A dirt tau. So A0 is today, A is when the supernovae emits. Okay, so now we can just put that thing here, which is L A squared delta tau over A zero. Now what's today's delta T? Today's delta T will be today's A zero times delta tau. And then what's the area? Well, the area is 4 pi r squared, except, you know, we have this thing now. See, if I have a metric like this, how do I calculate the area? Would be 4 pi times this. Yep.
I have two questions. The first is, what's in the denominator AA?
Ah, sorry, it's A0. It's today's scale factor. We can't take it to be 1 anymore because we're this k, that we are taking k to be discrete value to figure out what are they. So we already used our symmetry.
And then my other question is, yes. What actually is a supernova?
Supernova is a star that died.
How do we know they all?
There's people study supernovae, and then they say, oh, these ones, they all have the same luminosity. Then they are the type 1a, and there are other types that doesn't have that property. It just says then you burn, the stars burn the hydrogen and then burn the helium, and they keep burning, and at some point, it explodes. And I don't really exactly know what happens. I can look it up and send you some reference. But please.
Okay, so
please help.
1A are different to this, right? Because, so you have normal supernovae in which just a star explodes.
Yeah.
But type 1A are white dwarfs.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that white dwarfs have a maximum mass?
The Chandler cycle?
And usually they have a companion, right? And they attract mass from this companion. And at some point they get pushed over this 1.44 solar masses. Then they explode.
So it's standardized because of the Chandler cycle.
Exactly. So you know exactly which power went into it.
Thanks. Okay, cool. Let me just cancel that thing. Cool. All right. Here.
Sorry, can I actually ask about those times? Like, are they the delta T emitted that appears on?
Yeah.
Is that not the time?
It's
are they the same times like?
The part of the calculation is delta T emitted and the delta T observed is not the same. Like delta T observed is when the light arrives, then there's a delta T. And the delta T emitted is when supernovae emitted. And if you look at this metric, it's related by the factor of A. And the tau is the same because in this metric, the tau is exactly decay. And decay is the the co-moving observer's distance. And that's what we pick to be the same. That is not affected by expansion of the universe. That's why we want to write the metric this way, so we can relate to those delta t's. They're actually not the same. So delta t is related to the delta tau. And delta tau is exact same as the decay. And the chi is the co-moving coordinate that doesn't depend on expansion of the universe. For our original universe, this dt actually depends on the expansion of the universe. OK, so then we arrive here. So the last thing to do, of course, there's some chi dependence. We need to relate that to our redshift. But we have this formula, this basically the same. It's used the lambda observed, lambda emission, divided by lambda emission. And that's where the 1 comes from. And this is, did I do it wrong? It's like this. No. It's the other one. Yeah, because lambda is inverse proportion to. No, lambda is proportion to A. Like the stretching is the same as the wavelengths. So that's where we get that. So how is this helping us? Ooh. So let's try to say what's chi. Chi is, of course, the integral of dchi. And according to our coordinate, our light ray travel, that is related to integral of d tau because of our very cute coordinate. And then we relate it to integral dt over a. And then we get stuck. But let's say, how is it possible to relate this whole thing into z? By taking a derivative of this, we get a dz over a0 times 1 over a square. And a dot dt minus. So a0 is just a0. But the 1 over a, you do a derivative, you get minus 1 over a square, and then you get a dot dt. And of course, what we always do is to write it as a0 over a times h dt. So that tells us dt over a is dz over a0 times h. So you can calculate this. Well, OK, there's one more last thing to do, is what is h? Well, that's what we have been talking about the whole class. H is this guy. That's how h depends on a. That's where finally dark energy shows up there. So that h will jungle up all this dependent on a. So this thing is a function of a, which means it's a function of z. But in particular, if you want, it's a function of omega m, omega lambda. And probably radiation still can be ignored. And this guy, well, those two are enough. The third one is not independent. So basically now, we finally have a formula with flux and the redshift. It's not simple. But if you have a computer, you can do it. What people typically do is take this minus 2.5 log of the flux and call it a magnitude. And log is because our eyes function that way. I don't know where the 2.5 comes from. But that's called the magnitude of whatever star. Yeah, it's labeled that way. And then this is the redshift. So the idea is, if you pick omega m, omega lambda, it will give you a curve. They are all sort of, see, if you look at it, you can always take, if you go to the limit of a nearby galaxy flat, this is basically constant. This is give you a z. That's basically chi square. This is basically 1 over z square. So if you want, you can always take their nearby galaxy limit, you will get this. So this is our 1 over r square. 4 pi is there too. So 1 over this inverse square law is hidden in this whole thing. And you know, if you take a log on this side and put a minus sign, you get a log look like that. And then, of course, then they have supernovas and they're just plotted. And for example, if you do it with omega m equals 1, omega lambda equals 0, then there are some supernovas on this 0.3, 0.7 curve, but not on this curve. So that's how they determined, oh, there is dark energy. So what they actually determined about this dark energy is you can draw omega lambda, omega m plot. As you saw yesterday, there is some open or closed universe. There is some accelerating, decelerating. So this is accelerating, this is decelerating, and this is open, this is closed. And then the supernova tells us we lie here. And then when we talk about CMB, CMB tells us we lie here. Okay, my curve is weird. They don't intersect at the correct point. So basically, we have two, like 68% confidence blob, and which is interestingly perpendicular. So there are two observations can constrain on that plane all in the perpendicular way, which is very cool, which means where they intersect is basically where our universe is. I need to draw that curve better. Okay. Sorry. No. I draw this curve wrong. This curve should start here.
What is it?
Okay, let me draw this curve. So the best curve is if you check the tutorial solution, there is a picture from Andrew Little's book, and that draw it very carefully. But okay, let me draw it very carefully, because I can actually draw carefully this two curve. So there is one curve, says that one, so this is the open close. And the other curve says omega lambda. We only need half as much matter as dark energy. So it must be like this. So this says acceleration, deceleration. This curve is determined by this. And then there is a supernova measurements over here. So this is what's the supernova data, or anything alike. There are some other experiments. They determine that our universe should be on this line. And then there is this blob, basically CMB, so Planck and WMAP says we should be on that line. And then, of course, these two lines intersect. And that's 0.3, 0.7. OK, class is over.